chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it?
Well, North Bay Snipes and Jacks. I'm Tom, Mr. David Cortina on the board. Lou, you with us?
I am here, sir. How are you?
I'm doing all right. It's I can't imagine we're scrunching down only not much because we have all kinds of stuff to talk about. By the way, the guys who wouldn't sell the lethal injection stuff to South Carolina, so they got to go with this firing squad, managed to sell it to Texas last night as they roasted another guy, right?
I'm sorry, you broke up. There's I know they had proposed a firing squad. Did they not go through with it?
Oh, they did, but they haven't used it yet. But I'm saying allegedly you can't get the lethal injection stuff because the firms don't want to sell it, but they managed to find some in Texas last night because they off the guy.
Yeah, well, in Texas they know how to get stuff like that done.
What are they just
They're highly motivated.
Do they just go to the vet and get the stuff like made for a dog and shove it to a person or what?
That's a good question. I don't know. But I mean, for all I know, in Texas they've stockpiled it.
It wouldn't surprise me at all.
It wouldn't surprise me. Hey, listen, since I'm only going to be on for like 15 minutes now, I just figured rather than get into some detailed, lengthy discussion that we won't get through, I wanted to talk briefly about our buddy Tony La Russa again.
Unbelievable.
And his unwritten rules, which I'm fascinated by because, of course, as a lawyer, you're terrified of unwritten rules. Unwritten rules are the stuff of real disputes and real problems for clients. So it looks like Mr. La Russa has a whole, I guess this sounds intrinsically wrong, but a whole book of unwritten rules. Is that right?
Well, I suppose to be argumentative.
So what I'm talking and what I'm talking about is the Chicago White Sox catcher ignoring the sign from the manager and hitting a home run in a game that was a runaway anyway off
right.
A guy who was not even a pitcher.
I'm going to say, Lou, that if the world waits for you guys, meaning lawyers, to write up every single thing as a law and how people act, and there were no unwritten rules, you'd have nothing but chaos. There's unwritten rules on behavior
at
all.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think that, in fact, I think one of the big problems with our culture is that we have tended to legalize things that previously were a matter of sort of cultural knowledge and cultural understanding.
Right, I would agree.
But baseball. I mean, good heavens, the baseball rule book, like the NFL rule book, is like 15 inches thick. So I don't have a problem with going after quote unwritten rules. The written rule that I would, or unwritten rule that I would say I agree with in this case, is when a manager tells you to do something, you do it. And I guess that's because I'm a coach's kid. And if you don't, then you get smacked. La Russa was talking about some other kind of context, though, of not piling it on people, when the score's a runaway, and not taking advantage of the poor schmuck that the Twins put out on the mound to pitch.
See, I don't, as a guy who's, played softball for like many, many years, almost as many as Tony's managed, first of all, how does a guy look worse in person than he does in his drunk photo? Just saying, not that I look, all that photogenic, but I'm having trouble trying to trace the unwritten rule here that he's talking about. I don't.
Well, okay. So the idea is that this is somehow piling it on and it's disrespectful.
Well, I would say that if you were up by 15 runs, first of all, remember Will Chamberlain when his team was down, he would never dunk because he thought it was a show off move, and why would you show off when you're losing? Right. Of course, now today nobody would ever think of that. Now it's all about a highlight film, right? So, what exactly the other team has put in a position guy to pitch? He obviously can't get the ball over the plate. So, is it an unwritten rule that you you swing at something and try and make something happen, or you let the poor schmuck walk five guys in a row. I mean, in softball, I would say that if a guy can't get one over the plate and you want the game to move on, you swing at it and hit it someplace. Hopefully somebody will catch it. I mean, you don't just sit there if the guy can't find the plate and have five people in a row walk around the bases. That to me is, David, what do you think? I think that's almost worse.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not saying there's not a point to it.
Well, but I don't know. I'm trying to find out what the point is. You know, to take a 3-0 pitch, you guys are never going to swing ever on this guy. You're just going to let, I mean, until he puts three in a row that are over the middle and you go down on, I mean, I don't, okay, so the question I have, me the knucklehead that I am, okay, so the guy takes the pitch. Now what, on 3-1? He can't swing on that one either? The guy walks him, and then the next guy walks. I mean, I'm having trouble finding out what the unwritten rule. I get the part where you might not want to steal a base when you're up 15 runs or something like that. I mean, I get.
Well, that I can, yeah, that I can at least understand, because that's dangerous.
Yeah.
Well, I think the problem, Lou, is they're losing respect for the manager. That's one of the problems with the Sox. Is he going to lose the team?
How can he lose the team when they've got the best record in baseball?
Well, he's working at it.
Well, that's because he publicly comes out and criticizes his players, which he shouldn't be doing.
What I saw that, and I was really surprised to see him do that. You know, that violates one of the precepts that my father, and for that matter, you know, Bud Grant had when they were at the Vikings, which is you don't do stuff like that in public. You don't call out your own people and rip them, you know, that way. And I thought that was a mistake. And then to you know, basically say, yeah, I'm glad that the Twins pitcher threw at his head in the next game. I thought that was outrageous.
Well, I don't think that the other team even realized that this was a problem until Tony brought it up. Did the Twins even think it was an unwritten rule?
No, I don't think they did bring it up. He's the one that brought it up.
I think he's the one who brought it up.
Well, but the Twins, I mean, the Twins were obviously irritated at it because they had the pitcher throw at the guy the next game.
But I'm saying not until Tony opened his mouth. I mean, he's the one who said, we broke the unwritten rule. I don't think the Twins even knew.
I find it really interesting that, I mean, if I was going to discipline the guy, the catcher, I would have disciplined him for ignoring the sign. That seems to me to be legitimate. The fact that you're penalizing a guy for basically doing what you put him out there to do, which is hit the doggone ball. If you don't want him out there doing that, then pull him.
Well,
replace him with somebody.
Well, if I'm the reporter out there, of course I never would be, Lou, because I asked the wrong questions. If Tony's bitching about the guy missing the 3-0 sign, my question is going to be, okay, he takes it, it's a strike down the middle, now what are you going to do? Are you going to give him the take sign on 3-0? Is he ever going to get the swing, or are you just going to let people walk?
Right? Yeah, this is a little reminiscent of, in the NFL, you know, you pull your starters when the game's out of reach, but there's a legitimate basis for that, because every play in the NFL is potentially a career-ending play for somebody.
Right.
And so that at least makes sense. So you don't keep your starters in and keep them. But if you've got your starters in, if you're going to play them, you got to go full speed. I've never understood the idea in baseball of saying, okay, we're going to put this schlub out to pitch, the guy who can't pitch, and the other players have an obligation not to tee off of them. I don't agree with that.
Well, I mean, as Dr. J mentioned years ago, he said, if you're beating up on some team in football, he goes, put your second string in, put your third string in, but you can't ever tell your first string halfback that if he gets some open ground that he's supposed to stop.
No. No, although, you know, that strategy has started to come in. You know where that strategy comes in, right?
Where
you tell your first string guy not to.
If there's time left.
Yeah, scoring touchdowns at the end of games where you're trying to maintain a lead, and it's more important to burn the time up than it is to get the points.
That is still so freaky to me. I mean, in basketball, of course you do have the extra the 2-point conversion, but in basketball, you never back off from the layup, because if you make a layup, the best thing the other guys can do on the way back down is tie what you just did.
Yeah, but the, you know, if you're terrified of the other side's offense, and you're up, you're gonna score a touchdown, and it's gonna put you up by two.
Yeah.
You know, even with the 2-point conversion, it's gonna put you up by two. And there's like a minute and a half left. You know, you tell your offense, okay, I want, you know, we're down by whatever it is, six, or five. Go ahead and run, you know, we're going to run a couple of plays, but don't score right away. You know, stop, go down at the one or go down at the two and let the clock continue to run. That makes perfect sense to me, and I can understand that.
That's a rare occasion, though.
But you got to admit, it runs against every instinct that you have when you're on the field, which is get the yardage, get ahead.
Except if you're up by 10, if you're up by 10, the best thing you can do is go up by 17, regardless what the time is. If you're up by, you know, if it's going to put you up by one or two, so it's very specialized situations.
It is, but it reflects. It reflects the, you know, again, I think the thinking in football has gotten more advanced as we move along here. But it reflects the advanced thinking there. I just, in my mind, you listen to what your manager says.
Yep.
But in my mind, if you're going to put your starters out there, you can't tell them, or anybody, you can't tell a professional athlete, don't give me your best effort. You know, just as a matter of, I don't know what, chivalry.
Well, you also wonder side. With La Russa, would he have done the same thing to Abreu? And I'm thinking no, where he embarrassed him basically in front of everybody. I mean, this guy's a journeyman dude that just happened to be having a great year. Now, is he some guy you can beat up on and not the other people? I mean, I don't know. I mean,
your comment about him losing the team is interesting because, you know, there have been some really good baseball teams and really good football and basketball teams that have, and hockey, I guess, that have played really well because they hated the coach and they hated the coaching staff.
Well, that's true.
And maybe that's the situation there.
Well, I think if you're at a point where you think that if you band together, you're going to win something like the Sox, it's going to be much harder for him to lose the team than if they're a 500 ball club.
Agreed.
Because if it's a...
But
go ahead.
I was going to say, is you know, when he was hired, was there anything, I mean, was there an expectation that he, that this was a fantastic club, that he was going to move forward, or was the expectation that they needed some of, you know, an old hand at the till to kind of start pulling everything together?
No, everybody knew last year that they had some of the best young players in baseball. How well they've done this year, and the fact that two guys got hurt that they were counting on, and then this guy Mercedes comes out of the blue and he's like a little Babe Ruth. I mean, that has really helped them out. But they really have lost. They lost the left fielder, who's a total stud cake, the guy they got from the Cubs.
Yeah.
But the pitching staff, everybody thought it was going to be good. They didn't think it was going to be this good. But he is, so, I don't know if it's because of him or because of the general manager. I mean, Steve Stone claims they've managed to accumulate the best group of coaches in baseball. I mean, everybody who's needs help hitting, anybody who needs help something, these guys seem to be helping them, and they seem to be listening.
These guys know how to do it. Okay, well
they seem to be listening.
I'm gratified. It's just the Rockies suck. I'm gratified to see a Chicago team doing well. The Rockies are just a total disaster here.
And what happened to those guys? They were good for quite a while.
They were okay for a couple of years, but I think basically as soon as I moved out here, they went into the tank.
Yeah, but they got a good hockey team.
Oh, I'm sorry?
They got a good hockey team, though.
Oh, yeah. No, the Avalanche is playing very well. Very well. I mean, they won the trophy for the best record this year, but no, the baseball team. And that's too bad because that stadium, and I don't, have you ever, you've never been to Coors Field, have you, Chief?
I heard it's real nice.
I've been there, yeah, it's really nice.
There are a few things prettier in terms of scenery than sitting in the east stands of Coors Field and watching the sun go down behind the Rocky Mountains with this baseball game spread out in front of you. It is a beautiful setting.
Well, Lou, we'll make up for the short stint next week, buddy. You take care of yourself.
Okay, sir.
All right, SP Futures down 6. NASDAQ Futures down 2. We were down a bunch more earlier. We're coming back. Come back with Mr. Dan Janitas.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job.
David,
online trading
me.
Is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Alley, Mr. Davis Catino on the board. SP Futures now down 550. NASDAQ Futures are unchanged. They were just up 75 cents, so we've come back to just about even here. We have Mr. Dan.
Yes.
Dan, I got a couple of market questions for you before we go into this stuff. What the hell is going on? What is going on with the fabric of the market here? Is anybody even home? I mean, as we've gone from our geniuses in Washington have decided that three or four market makers, getting rid of everybody, getting rid of all the floor traders, getting rid of all those people is really a good thing because don't worry, three or four people making $1 zillion a day can handle it. Did you watch the NASDAQ yesterday afternoon? There must have been four or five 60-point moves in like, is there any, if you want to buy a 10 lot, what do you have to do? Run at 40 point? I mean, is there anybody home in any of this stuff?
Yeah, no, I was watching the NASDAQ and the Dow, you know, all the markets actually, just all over the place. I think the, we need to, you know, I think Washington needs to stay out of our business, you know, and kind of let it operate as it has in the past, which for the most part has been pretty successful, pretty good. I mean, we've had a really nice run here in the market, but this volatility, this moment-by-moment volatility is definitely not good for the market.
Well, how do we go from just this market fabric, and I'll take up a little bit of your time here, for a long period of time, the really from 73 at, from the inception of the options exchange, Chicago Board Options Exchange, the mentality was if you got more and more people making markets, that your depth and liquidity was going to be better and better. And all of a sudden, four or five firms managed to talk these buffoons into thinking the less people you have, don't worry, we can handle it, is a better way to go. How did anybody ever believe that?
I totally agree with you, and I don't know how anyone has ever believed that, because we're exactly, the more market makers, the more you have the more activity, the more liquidity, the more competition, you know, I mean, it's more, you know, that has been my experience as well. And I don't agree with you on the, I mean, I do agree with you on the, you know, the market fabric changes if you were suddenly faced with, you know, a smaller group of people. And this is, and I mean, this has been a trend, you know, in recent years, and it doesn't necessarily help. I mean, the thing that's offsetting some of that is the, you know, the fiscal stimulus and some of the, you know, that's kind of added to the liquidity, but I think liquidity dries up quickly. And also, if you don't have more market, you know, it takes away the sense of competition, it takes away the sense of better pricing, I think actually the more market makers you have, I think the more stability you have in the market.
Well, I would agree. Two other quick questions. One is, there was a gentleman on CNBC yesterday, and he was actually way younger than us, Dan, but he must have been doing some research. You know, I've been kind of talking from out of my behind regarding, you know, last time there was inflation with the market moves and so forth. But I don't really want to give, you know, advice and really start pounding on what I think might happen, because, first of all, it's not like doggy downer. But secondly, you know, every time is different. But this dude came up with some info yesterday that I, as much as you know, I've forced you to talk about it, even though you probably don't want to. I mean, he came up with some numbers. I was stunned. He says, I forget the name of the firm, African-American guy, probably 40-ish. And he, I don't know, the guy must have been doing some serious research. He said, you know, the last time we went into an inflationary spiral, he goes, the market was roughly 20 times earnings back in like 68 or 69. He said, when the inflation started, over the next few years, we had I think he said 50% correction, 45 to 50% correction, which essentially brought the market down to 10 times earnings, which is legit when the interest rates are 7, 8, 9, 10%. And why would any firm be trading more than that if your risk-free rate is? I mean, he said it so articulately, I'm sitting there going, why didn't I just bring this guy on the show instead of me stabbing at it? And he goes, now the P.E. ratios are like 30. So if we go through the same routine and we end up down at 10 because the interest rates explode because the Fed can't hold them down because of inflation, he goes, we're talking massive corrections. He goes, why is everybody talking about 5%, 10% down maybe, and then it's a huge buy? He goes, they're not even close to what is liable to happen if the worst thing happens here. What's your comment on that? I'm sitting there listening.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's great about being a professional is that there's opinions. You know, everyone has an opinion, right? And there's definitely, you can take data and you can interpret the data to come up with your own conclusions and your own views of what's happening in the world. And I don't really believe that. I don't think, you know, we're not quite there yet with the inflation. I do have some inflationary concerns, which I'll talk about, but I think there's like that may be an extreme view. It's not what I'm hearing from the CEOs. You know, I've been in two conferences this week, and we've had a lot of one-on-ones with CEO and senior management, and we're seeing a lot of very positive, you know, a lot of demand. You know, they're very positive for the second half of 2021 and for 2022, more so than I probably have heard in my entire career. So I'm kind of coming from a different point of view on my opinion on, you know, the valuations. I do think that the tech side has been, you know, we're seeing that correction. We've been seeing that correction this year. You know, we've been, you know, since the beginning of the year, basically seeing tech correcting. And I think that is, I'll give them that much on the tech side. But I think on the, you know, across the board, I think that's a pretty, I do not agree with that, you know, assumption. I don't know that, and you know, we're hearing about, you know, transitory inflation. I'm not sure. I think some areas, and maybe commodities are part of this, will be transitory. There will be a period of time. I do think some areas like wage inflation, which is what I'm most concerned about, will have a longer term impact on inflation. But I don't think inflation is going to be out of control. It was out of control in the late 60s and early 70s. It's not. I don't think we're in that environment where it's out of control. There's different forces that are kind of, technology is keeping inflation down. And in terms of the market being inflated, there's a lot of money out there. So it's, you know, the fact that the market could perform as well as it did during the whole COVID period, I feel like we're pretty much out of the COVID period now, or just about out of it. And the market is, you know, I kind of see a lot more optimism going forward as an investor. So, I don't necessarily agree with that. I mean, I think there's always going to be different opinions, and that's not one that I would support.
Most of what he said is basically fact, but it did happen.
Okay, yeah, it did. Yeah.
Now, the question is, if we go to a, and I'm not going to go with a 12% inflation, but if we go to a 7 or 8 number in the 30 years or even 6, where does that put P ratios versus today, and where does that put the market? I mean, I think that calculation is something that certainly you and I should have in the back of our head. I mean, we're not going to be here.
I agree with that. I just don't know if I agree with that much inflation. I think there's going to be there's definitely going to be inflation, but I don't think it's going to be quite that extreme. I think one thing that needs to happen is the stimulus needs to slow down a little bit. I think that would be we may not need as much as we have on the table right now. I mean, the infrastructure piece of that I agree with. I think that's the part that I think will be helpful for the economy as a whole. But some of the other parts of this stimulus program, it is going to seem like it's overdone, and as the Fed hopefully keeps an eye on this and pulls back, we'll start seeing a little more stability, and I think that's going to help help keep inflation in under control. It doesn't mean we're not going to have it. It just means that
where did you pick up the piece on the Fed's going to pull back? They're not pulling back at all.
Not now, but I'm saying that at some point in the future, I think that could happen when they look back and say, hey, maybe we did kind of push this too much. So they don't want to make a mistake right now. That's the impression that I have. And there was a mistake that was made in December of 18. That was a rough month for the market. And I think now the Fed is just being very, we don't want to change course very, very much. And also the sort of pushing like all this money into the system, I think once they start reflecting on, they're going to reflect on past numbers rather than necessarily what they think is going on in the future. And once they start seeing some results that are, of inflation really creeping in even more, hopefully they will slow things down. Well, if they don't, we're going to be in the situation you're talking about.
They're trying their best to keep the information away from us.
Yes.
Which bothers the living bleep out of me. But when I was looking at the Home Depot numbers, and again, all you can really do is read between the lines. As they used to say on the trading floor, Dan, they'd hold up three fingers and say, read between the lines, right?
yeah.
When you start looking at stuff like the amount of tickets, whatever, I guess they call them tickets, people going through the cashier, for lack of a better term, at Home Depot, they're up 20%, revenue's up 30%. Well, they had about a string of those, and every one, the light seems to be going on that the prices are 10% higher than last year. If you read between the lines at all, and anybody who does any shopping there will tell you that's at least the number.
We're not gonna
get these numbers, and I just wonder the mentality seems to be, and I think it's because these guys, I don't know, it's not like they're not old codgers, because they are. I mean, they are of the mindset that if they screw up and they put in a little too much, that if they decide to go, 2% for a few years, it's a fix. Where are they getting that? The last time we needed a fix in that area and people overshot, the number was like 12 or 15. Where are these guys getting the idea that if they can go, okay, we'll raise rates to like 2.25% and we'll fix it. Where are they getting that from? I mean, that's coming out of their behind or what? I don't see that ever in history, do you?
No, I totally agree with what you're saying. I kind of look at them as not necessarily the although they do have a lot of control over obviously interest rates and what happens in the economy. I still go back to December of 2018, where there was clearly a mistake that was made.
What do you think was a mistake?
Moving in the wrong direction. And I think what happens is there is a balancing. The economy, the one thing that is good about the economy is there is a balancing effect. They might find out too late, which would not be a good thing, but I don't think it's the long-term trend. I think the trend is for inflation. This is the part of the cycle we're in, and we have to let it happen.
Well,
we don't need to push it even further. I agree with you. We don't need to push it further. But this, we are at that part of the cycle where rates are going to start, should start going up. And we may not, you know, the Fed may not be right. I mean, just as analysts, street analysts aren't always right. You can't really, you know, and that could have an impact. But I think that impact, that negative impact, is going to be more temporary than long term.
Well, I mean, I'm just going to ask you a quick question, then I want to talk more about your stocks. I have a bunch of people. Hey, make sure Dan goes over those preferred stocks again this week.
Yeah, actually, I have that right in front of me.
Just one. All right, so indulge me one more. Why do you think it was a mistake in 2018? I mean, they came to the conclusion that we don't need to be spending $8 billion a day, and they didn't. They were doing it since 2008. I mean, isn't 10 years long enough? I mean, I think we're absolutely... This, to me, is... I mean, I'm not a huge biblical scholar, but this reminds me of the day they stopped the manna from heaven. The day they're going to stop. I think the market is totally dependent on these guys pouring money in every day, and I wish it. That's what bothers the living hell out of me. I absolutely wish I was in your camp on this, that they could just all. But I don't. I think if they stop tomorrow, I think we got a problem. I think it's the only thing that's keeping us up. Is them pouring money into the system every day, and it's on somebody's desk every night, and the next morning they got to do something with it.
You know, I may be a little more optimistic in terms of knowing that investors, you know, there's still a fair amount of cash out there, you know, and one of the, you know, if you look at, you know, people's net worth and all that, and you look at housing prices, there's, you know, there are a lot of different factors to consider I'm not saying that they should put the brakes on or that they should, but I think there have to be some slowing in time, you know, and the question is, are they going to do it in anticipatory, or are they going to do it sort of in reaction to results that are coming in? And my impression now, what is different is that they're going to do it in reaction to what's coming. So I don't know if I totally agree. I think we're in better shape than you know, we're hearing, like, for example, from Janet Yellen, and, you know, initially when she was just like keep throwing money into the system. And I think we're in better shape, but maybe it just depends on where you are. Geographically, I know here all I see is construction and building and more money coming into Southwest Florida. So I see a very vibrant, already a very vibrant economy. And I don't know that throwing more money is going to necessarily, I don't know how much more we need to keep the system going.
Well, at some point you got to.
But I don't think it's going to be so negative that it's going to stall us here.
Well, they obviously think it is, or they'd be doing it. I mean, today, do we really need $8 billion today? We couldn't go with $6?
Yeah, no, I hear you. I totally agree with you on that. I think we could go with a little less.
Okay, so you got any new stuff? You got, all of a sudden now,
yeah,
everybody's loving the preferreds, and as a matter of fact, I had a long conversation with somebody yesterday. So where does Dan find these places? I said, well, Dan, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, I said, Dan looks at people that maybe aren't in the S&P 500, and he looks at businesses that are not capable of borrowing at 2.5% like the big guys. We wonder why they're big. That's why they're big. And he finds people that have to pay a little more, but they also are competent. They got cash coming in, and they're real companies. And that's his niche. And I said, that's a great niche. So is that a fair statement?
Yeah. I mean, where I get the idea is, I think being in the business for 35 years and being an investor for 35 years, you know, the network you develop over time is there, but conferences help a lot. The one-on-one meetings with management really help. It makes a much bigger difference to talk to a small or micro-cap company to have that you know, that first conversation or some of the early conversations face-to-face or, you know, computer to computer, if you will, now. And that way you're able to get a good first impression. And we put management as one of the key factors when we're looking at, when we're doing our research. So the management team is very important. A lot of these companies are in niche businesses. You know, we focus on free cash flow, so we think that's very important. And going to the preferred, for example, Blue Knight, which we've been talking about for a while, has been buying back the preferred. They, you know, divested their oil and gas storage business and just have asphalt as their primary business. The stock price, I mean, the preferred stock price is up 33% over the last 6 months.
Dan, when those guys...
And they're still paying close to 9%.
Dan, what are the, for a guy who doesn't know as much about preferreds as you do, is there's no restrictions on going out in the free market and buying your preferred back, or do you have to do some kind of an offering, or how does that work? Is it like common stock or not?
It is like common stock, and it in you know the terms of these F preferreds, just as the terms of bonds vary, you know, the indenture, if you will, with a bond. The preferreds that trade like bonds, for example, Blue Knight, Chicken Soup for the Soul is another one that I mentioned, also paying close to 9%. They trade more like bonds. The mandatory preferreds, they have a redemption date, like a bond, but they're not as widely followed, and they're not as exciting as, say, the tech names to a lot of investors. But what they provide in your portfolio is a really good, they're steady eddies that are providing some nice income, and they're tending to trend in a straight line upwards. I mean, that's one thing compared to the other sort of sectors. If you look at, you know, other areas of the market, they are the one that, they are the ones that don't have this, like, volatility. They have day-to-day volatility because they're small, but they, you know, they're kind of, the type of, investment that you keep as a core position and, you know, hold on to it and get that extra yield, and you're not going to be trading in and out of it. You're not looking to make money, and you're not seeing the swings, you know, so if there's swings in the market from day to day, you kind of get a sense of comfort that those names are just, you know, their prices are just hanging in there. So
well, the most preferreds have an expiration. I thought like Fannie and Freddie preferred the big companies. They didn't have it. I thought they were perpetual.
Most, well, now, if you look at a preferred that's more like an equity, then it's going to be perpetual.
Okay.
So there are preferreds that are issued that are perpetual. They generally don't pay as much. They have the option of paying the dividends so they can get out of it. Like, say they had a poor quarter, they don't have to pay as much in that quarter. But, and then there's also cumulative prefers where they are required to pay, but they can, you know, it depends. They can pay a little bit. If they have a slow quarter, they might make it up in the next quarter. Mandatories mean they have to pay that dividend out each quarter, that, you know, that fixed rate dividend, just like with the bond. So that's the differentiator. Both of those, again, ticker symbol on Blue Knight, BKEPP, ticker symbol on Chicken Soup for the Soul, CSSEP. Those are, I think, probably your best bets on the income side, you know, as alternatives to high yield bonds. It's a place you can still get income. You can get some stability. You know, the companies are just doing extremely well. They're focused on free cash flow. They're not impacted by the day-to-day movements of the market. So.
What about the guys?
And one other area that I've mentioned as well, another name that kind of goes along with that in the REIT space is SELF, S-E-L-F, which is Global Self Storage, paying 6%. And now they've had an increase in the, you know, if you look at the price of that stock, that, you know, that's gone up to about 5.5%. I mean, 5.5 from 3.5 to 5.5 now, and it's paying 6%. So that's a public storage REIT, another steady eddy that's just, you know, giving you some really good yield. And yeah, we have to do a little more homework to find these names, but these are names that tend to buck the trend. They're not following the market. They're well capitalized and also well run, and they're also focused on free cash flow.
You still like
that's
the,
one of the differentiators, I think, in our business is that focus on free cash flow.
You still like the container guys?
I do. Yeah, I do. I mean, they sold off a little bit recently, but you know, I do like them long term. I mean, there's going to be some temporary glitches. I know that there's been, like, basically traffic issues coming into some of the ports on the West Coast. But I do. I think they're well managed, and these companies that are well managed get through these difficult periods. So if they have a short term blip, you know, a little bit of news that's negative in the short run, they get through them. But yeah, I do like Matson, and I don't necessarily like the industry as a whole, but I do like Matson in the industry. I have another name, though, that came up this week at a conference, and we're still doing some work on it, but I think it's always good to have a story stock, if you will, and, you know, especially in your local area. So this is a Chicago-based company, I think Bridgeview, I think is where they are, company called Manitex, ticker symbol MNTX. Now, this is not this is not a preferred, this is a common. It's a smaller company. Manitex is one of the, you know, lead crane operators. They manufacture cranes. And they have a facility in outside of Austin, Texas that makes the straight line cranes. But they also have some operations in Italy that make more niche products. And these knuckle cranes that they have that are knuckle boom cranes, they're called. And there's they're pretty much market leader in those. The guy that took over as CEO a few years ago came from Terex, and Terex is probably the number one, has been the number one crane manufacturer worldwide.
When you
for
say
a long
cranes,
time.
Are these the ones that are on the big tracks, or are these the creepy crawler cranes you use on a building?
Well, both, but the ones that you see on a building usually are the ones that they do. The ones that they do here in the States are in the building. The ones they do in Europe, they do pretty much everything in the niche. Like, they're more niche cranes, right, that would do.
But not the ones that if somebody wants to put an air conditioner on your roof, they show up with the
no, this would be a bigger, yeah. This would, right. Would be a bigger, okay. You know. They could do it if you're talking about the roof of a building, yes.
But these are the ones you use for, actually, that was, Wasn't the invention of that crane one of like the top 5 or 10 inventions in the world for construction?
I think so. Yeah.
I mean, when you think of them putting the Empire State Building up without those cranes, how the hell did they even do it?
How could have they done it? I know. Yeah, I see a lot of them, like I said here, because we have a lot of construction going on, both road construction as well as you know. Home construction, you know, condos. There's a lot of building, and you know, just from, you know, talking to a lot of the people, my contacts out there, that's happening in a lot of the smaller cities as well. On the east coast of Florida, you're seeing, you know, like in cities like West Palm Beach and Fort Lauderdale, you're seeing a lot of cranes downtown. So it's a demand for the business. It's also in Europe, you know, and Europe tends to follow us. So that trend, I think, is happening in Europe. They might be a little slower. They might be a little bit behind us, but I think this construction boom is going to continue. The concern I have with, you know, my emphasis, I think if I had to say that there's a niche that's going to do better than tech, I still think this infrastructure, you know, looking at some of these industrial names that are, that have kind of been left behind, but they're really well-run companies. And this company, like I said, focuses on free cash flow. They paid off some debt that they had, you know, last year. So they're well run. They're expanding. You know, they may make some small acquisitions, but they're you know, market leaders. So they, you know, and they're in a niche product. So they tend to, you know, again, be more like steady eddies. Small stocks trading around seven or eight. But this is again one of those names that's maybe not going to directly track the index.
Dan, we got less than a minute. I want to get your opinion a little bit on all these stocks that we haven't really talked about them, but we did maybe once or twice. All the material stocks that all of a sudden in the last, well, they've been going up forever, but the last 2-3 weeks they've really shot up. Your steel companies, your Cleveland Cliffs, your, actually Freeport had a little bit of a down yesterday, but are those things getting toppy? Are you still like those? I mean, I know it's a general question, but it seems like those guys have been the ones that have been to the moon here. Every oil company, every steel company. I mean, is the pricing power going to get that much? Is there that much demand, or are they kind of ahead of themselves?
From all of the CEOs I've been talking to with these companies, there is that much demand. I mean, they're really, really favorable on later this year and into next year. But they may be a temporary top. So maybe this might be like a, you know, we may not see the same amount of, you know, acceleration in the price going forward, but I think what's happened is that this has been a rotation into these names and a rotation out of tech, and you know, I think people having more confidence in you know, infrastructure in general being something that's going to be pretty well received by the majority of Americans. So,
well, you're never going to. The hard part is you're never going to get one of the things that kind of bothers that we got a dash here, but the verbal infrastructure is not in place like it was in the 70s. I mean, you're not, even when you go to a conference, you're not going to get the steel guy saying demand is terrific, but oh, by the way, the prices are up 20% and we're actually only sold 10% more steel. You're never going to hear that. I mean, you might be able to dig through with some questions in his private office, but in general, it's not part of, You're not going to get the Home Depot guy to say, we're up 10% on same store sales, but oh, by the way, it was all inflation. We actually sold 5% less crap. I mean, they're not going to do that.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. And I think on the high, coming from the high yield side, I can remember those steel company meetings from the 80s and, you know, from years ago. So I definitely hear you that those are the questions we got to ask. When we get into the discussions. And you're right. It's not in the presentations today.
All right. Thank you very much, buddy. We got some new stuff here. The Matson guys, they can't get into those reports. They're still that crowded, huh?
Oh, yeah. Jim Pack.
Wow. Well, thank you for that stuff. Thank you for everything, Dan.
Sure.
Okay, next week, buddy. SP Futures now down 350. NASDAQ Futures are up 14. So they've come all the way back. Be right back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holly, Mr. Dave Santino, and aboard S&P Futures down 4, NASDAQ Futures up 12, Dow Futures down 87. So we've come pretty much all the way back. We were up, we're down 16 in the spoos when we came in. So they've come the other way around the rest of the world. So we've had that kind of the bounce yesterday as well. We were down 600 at one point. So we had a big bounce on the close. DAX up 117.8% as we're trying to recover from the several days in a row down. FTSE up 23.3%. Kakarana up 49.8%, so moderately bullish in Europe. A Nikkei 53 points, and that's not a whole lot if they've been down pretty heavy this week. 0.2% Shanghai down 4, call that flat. Hang Seng up down 143, that's 0.5%. Australia's up 1%. They were down over 2 the other day. So everybody's trying to stabilize here, but we've been We've been, somewhat down here. The Dow yesterday was down 164, S&P down 12, Nasdaq down 3. At one point, the S&P was down down near 60. So, it was a big comeback yesterday, but not all the way to the positive though. Bonds 1.66. It's down two basis points. The Bund minus 0.09, right where that was. Japan minus positive 0.08. UK positive 0.86. Oil down 71 cents. These guys are down from like the 64.65 they were down to 62.65. Brent down 90 cents, 65.76. Natural gas unchanged at 2.96. RBOB down a penny at 2.08. So that's down from probably like 2.20 when we had the pipeline problem. Gold down 13 bucks, 18.68, but still hanging up in that high 18s. Doesn't look like it's threatening 1900 or anytime soon, but it might. So, silver down 20 cents, 27.81. Copper unchanged at 4.58. And the big news, the crypto. Actually, Bitcoin is up over 41,000 now, up 2,700 after trading like 30,000 yesterday. The thing is, everybody decided to pile back in because of fundamentals. See, David, they have no assets and they have no income. What the hell is the fundamental?
I don't understand it.
What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
7:38 in Chicago. Today's weather, 70. Right now it's 70, mostly cloudy. We're going to get to a high of 82 degrees today. With some clouds. For our Phoenix listeners, it's 76 and clear. The highs today, 97 and sunny. Wind traffic. Traffic buildup is normal. The heavy spots are the long-term road construction spots on the Kennedy and the Eisenhower. And we have solid traffic on 55 North at the Ryan exit. In sports, the Cubs lose to the Washington Nationals 4-3. Sox beat the Twins 2-1, and Diamondbacks drop one to the Dodgers 4-2. In the NBA, the playoff games are done. The Suns play the Lakers on Sunday. Golf PGA's championship starts in South Carolina today. Back to you, Chief.
7,800 yards.
Yeah.
Long course.
Long course.
I'm not even sure walking that thing's going to be.
I definitely would not walk that.
Not like the old days. We, 36 holes carrying your bag. That ship has kind of sailed.
Yeah, I think we're a little old for that.
Yeah. John, how are you, bud?
I'm a good time. How about you?
Not as good as when. I'll tell you what, though, the hardest, the carrying and beating, we were, in pretty good shape in those days. But the one that always frosted me, Dave, was that 18th hole at Big Run. The thing is straight uphill.
I just played that course a week ago.
Is it still as hard as it possibly can be?
It's miserable.
It is absolutely miserable. With the what do they call them, the mountaintop greens, where if you get up there, everything wants to roll off, and it's just, ugh. But the ninth hole has got to be one of the hardest holes in the whole area. And 18 is impossible. It's just a straight uphill.
Well, the ninth hole isn't. It's like 600 yards. It really is impossible.
Down a well-treed corridor. And how do you stay straight down that thing? I don't.
I think I took a double on that hole.
Well, that's pretty good. But 18, no matter what you do, even when I could hit the ball a long way, even if you pop one right where that water crosses, it's an amazing. What's the green? 100 feet over your head at that point?
At least.
And you just say, how the hell do you even hit one up there that doesn't land in that, that incredible hill up that you can barely stand on the thing. You can't bring your cart out there or anything.
And don't be long on it, because there's no way to stop the ball on the way down.
It's tough. But my buddy Bill Murphy used to have a tee time there every Sunday morning at 7. And he said they would start early, so they would be. His first round of golf would be like in April. And at 7 in the morning at Big Run, I go, you got to be kidding me. But then that's your first swing at anger is a Big Run at 7 o'clock on a 50-degree day. You got to want it. Just saying. John, you never had the golf bug, so you were sane. So.
Well, I did play it once at Notre Dame for the component of the phys ed course. And it was that beautiful spring of 1971. It's actually one of my happier memories being on campus.
God. We used to, David, the deal was the golf was a buck and a quarter, right, if you were a student. So that was a real number.
Yeah, that's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, so I used to play with Ian Williams, who was a All-American hockey player. He loved to golf. So the two of us, we'd get out of our class at whatever, 3 o'clock, because he was an economics major too. And we'd hustle over, and you'd carry your clubs. We could walk that course in probably 245 maybe, because he was a pretty good golfer. And it wasn't, it's not that long, but you know, basically, you know, you're two shots a hole, and whether you, so it was you could get around that thing real fast. Plus, when you're that age, you walk pretty fast too, right? I mean, it was the nicest thing on earth. Just walk right over. Here's my bucket of quarter. Off I went. You know, it was like the same as a pitcher of beer, for God's sake. So, what should we do? One more pitcher and go play golf? Ah, let's go play golf. go shoot 18.
Yeah, bring the beer.
Yeah, pretty much. So, John, what do you make of your Bitcoin flying around? I know you have about 50 Bitcoins in your back pocket.
This has just left me kind of open mouth. I don't know if the whole thing is just one big, you know, invented story, you know, where it's about, you know, it's like we're back in the days of Jonathan Swift and the wooden coins that were being minted in Ireland, you know, to completely to destroy the currency. It's not a commodity. It's like a virtual product, and you got, you know, drive ups and drive downs, and it's casino thinking gone wild. I'm just kind of aghast. I don't know enough about it to really explain what's all at stake here, but the whole thing just leaves me, you know, completely befuddled.
Well, we have I think there's several things that come into play. It's like the perfect storm. I mean, one is a lot of people don't necessarily trust the, I'll use the term, the fiat currencies, because look what they've done to those. Okay, so there's no way. I mean, it's like Rome. I mean, David, you probably haven't heard me say this, but back in, 300-400 BC, when Rome first came out with the currency, there was enough silver in the currency that, like, one, I don't know what the name of the damn thing was, say it was a shekel, but it wasn't. One shekel essentially had enough silver in there where it was a day's pay. And as time went by, they kept pulling back the amount of silver to where it was still given to people as a day's pay, but it had way less silver in there, right? So because they wanted to, you know, bring it to the provinces, and they wanted to pay those people, whatever. I mean, so they basically degraded their currency, and you get away with it for, like, quite a while. And so you got sort of that going to the point, and then you've got, you know, the political situations where the dollar is the only thing used for oil trades. You've got you know, a lot of, I'll say, questionable trades, or people just not wanting to know. Even if they're legal trades, they don't necessarily want people knowing about them. I mean, if I go out and, you know, I'm not like I do this very often, but if I buy a car from David and it's $4,000, why can't I give David 40 hundos? Why does anybody need to know I bought the car from David? I mean, obviously, you got a title. The state could probably figure it out, but why does everybody need to know? It's need to know basis on everything I do. I don't care necessarily, because I'm not doing anything illegal, but the fact that somebody needs to know just bothers the living bleep out of me.
As long as you pay the necessary fees and taxes, yeah, and everything, who cares?
But I'm saying, yeah. So, I mean, so you have sort of that going, and then you say, well, okay, if the fiat currencies are becoming worth, quote, less and less, is there going to be an alternative currency? You know, the Chinese don't want to use the dollar. Could somebody, I mean, say, for instance, if Venezuela was straight, you know, or it was competent in anything they did, could they put an international currency out there that every, I'll use the term dollar, every dollar is redeemable by, you know, a quart of oil or something? I mean, if there was something behind it, maybe would that take over on some international trades from the dollar or the pound or the euro dollar? Possibly, because there's something behind it. But to go from there to just say, well, we got this new currency, let's just use this one. By the way, people can't track it, which, by the way, they can. Maybe not as easily, but they can, because every computer, you can track the computer at some point. So we're gonna use this. Okay, but even if you did that, you'd think you'd want a stable price on it. I mean, you don't want, even though we're starting to get there, you don't want the dollar in your pocket being worth 3 candy bars today, 1 the next day, and 10 the day after. The currency is supposed to be the stable piece.
Right.
And everything else around it, if it goes up or down, should be defined in how much it moves by the currency, not the other way around. So now you have, this thing is like a commodity. It's priced
exactly
in dollars.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
It's scarcity, or it's plenitude, are what's, you know, creating the value. not the usefulness or the species behind it or anything. So
now you have this. So then now so many people are involved, but you have stacks. I'm going to say that are worth next to nothing. They have potential. They have an idea. Okay, they at least have something. When you start talking 80, 100 times revenue, they clearly aren't there yet, right? Which isn't to say that every big company might have started out that way at some point. But you forget and see all the ones that lie along the side of the road and the one that makes it, right? How many companies were around in 1999 that you never heard of because they're gone, right? So yeah, some made it, most didn't. You know, most restaurants don't make it, some do. So now you have that part happening. So you got just people, and then the thing starts going up, then it becomes like tulips or turtle eggs. As long as it's going up, people want in. They don't care what it is. Does anybody care what stack is going up as long as it's going up? I mean, I have people that call me from, not necessarily to my PTI clients, but other people, call up and say, hey, why weren't we in, XYZ yesterday? Well, you're 80 years old. you're in a protected program. By the way, you've got some fixed income. What are you talking about? Those companies never earned a dime. Yeah, but they've been up 4 days in a row. Why don't I have some of that? You know what I mean? So you get that phenom where I deserve to be in whatever's up, and I don't really care what it is. There's that going on. It has been for a while. So I don't know so there's all kinds of bits and pieces that are coming together. But yesterday was the creme de la creme. When it was trading like 32 Bitcoin, a guy comes out and says, you got to buy it here because fundamentally it's a buy. I'm going, fundamentally? There's no company, there's no income, and there's no dividend. What are you talking about fundamentally?
Well, it's the triumph of the whole virtual reality phenomenon of creating something out of nothing. And as long as you're within it and you buy into it and you consent to be persuaded by the numbers and you agree to make transactions using it, this works just fine for the closed circle of people who have invested in it and trust it and want to drive up its value. But it highlights just how screwed up all the other so-called bona fide currencies have become in a way, and it shows the weakness of a system that is so easily driven around by just a comment or two on Twitter, and all of a sudden the price just goes haywire. And meanwhile, the actual, what's supposed to be the result of all this is, which is stability and expectations and ease of transactions, just becomes horrendously difficult and unpredictable. So I guess I don't blame Bitcoin any more than I blame what's happened to the dollar or the euro or any other currency that has just been manipulated and twisted into something that bears very little connection to reality.
But you see the trends over a period of time, and mentally, especially because one of the groups I do some business with, a lot of the people are retired, or their age of retiring, or thinking about retiring, and some are way past the day they retired. The whole concept of, and I'm not saying this is the way people should trade or not, but people always had a choice. I won't say always, but damn near always had a choice between whether your investments provided income, and the economic, I won't say trick bag, but the economic understanding is that if you've managed to, work your whole life, wife works, I'm not talking, I'm not doing a sociological thing here, but, and you save up some money for your retirement. Now, other people have terrific ideas that might be 25 years old, that might be the next, I won't say Bill Gates because what's happened to him lately, but might be the next genius that starts a company and makes a fortune. That person usually does not have money, okay? So what he needs is money to put his ideas to work. And you, by the way, have money, and you've just said it. I retired. It's somebody else's job now to have the idea. And I'm not saying it's always the old versus young thing, but it's basically people that have money to invest. They want to, as my grandfather used to say, anybody can break his back for a dime. The smart man has his money working for him, instead of the other way around. Are you working for the money? And so it used to be that if you retired, you could say, okay, I'll put my money in a CD or something, and a bank will give me 5 or 6%. And it's their job to go find the guy as an intermediary that's going to return 10%, who's going to be happy to pay me 6%, and he's going to live on the four. And this that's how the economy works. But for such a long period of time, the Fed has taken that basically out of the mix. You can't just invest your money, have somebody use it with good ideas and pay you a reasonable number for that. And what the Fed has done over a period of time, in addition to screwing things up, in my opinion, they've totally screwed up people's mentality and investing.
Exactly.
So now the only money you get, I mean, if you call your broker or whoever, I mean, we just had Dan Janitas and I talk about some preferred stocks that are actually paying a real number, and I have some people that are interested, blah, blah, blah. So, but that is so rare. It is so rare where somebody can actually say, I like that company. By the way, they're going to pay me 6%, 7%, and, you know, and I can be okay with that. Right now, it's no matter what it is, the only way you get paid is by appreciation and price of the unit you're buying. You didn't care if you walked into a 1981 to Continental Bank and gave them a CD and they paid you 12%. You didn't expect the price of the CD to go up, right? You just wanted your 12%. Well, right now, there's none of that. So you're going to get that the 80-year-old guy calling you on the phone saying, you know, XYZ Turtle Farm in Kenya was up 20% yesterday. Why didn't we have that? Well, first of all, it's the first I heard of it. And how the hell did you even hear about it? I mean, you know, I mean, but that, so it's not me being critical. What the world is telling you, what the Fed has told you, the only way that you're going to make money now is to buy something that appreciates in price. Forget about the income piece. So people, after a long period of time, are responding to that. So it's not like I'm being critical. I'm just saying there ought to be another choice where I can just invest my money in a stable place who has ideas that is making 10%, and oh, by the way, they're willing to pay me 5%. That's the way the world ought to work, and it just isn't for a long period of time. And it's causing, I think, discontinuities that are getting worse by the day, especially in people's... So you're going to end up having an awful lot of people in IRAs and stuff like that all of a sudden getting their ass kicked when this stuff goes down that shouldn't have been up in the first place. And you're going to find people that are 90 years old that are in Bitcoin. And say, what are you doing in there? Well, I can't make any money anywhere else. Where am I supposed to be? It's going up. And how do you really debate that, John?
No, you know, I blame... A number of things, but one of the ways that people became acculturated to this kind of insanity is, you know, when adjustable mortgages became the norm, and this is when the interest rates were all over the ballpark, and nobody wanted to lend money at a fixed rate because the interest rates was skyrocketing. But people then became accustomed to having a mortgage on your home tied with its interest rate to some fluctuating index that you assumed would or hoped would not exceed a certain amount or you couldn't afford the loan anymore. But there was no guarantee that it couldn't go through the roof. And people just began to take this as a given. This is the normal way now we will refinance our property. This is the way we expect to lend money on such terms. And that had never been the case, ever. I mean, there weren't always amortized mortgages where you had a 30-year term to pay it off. You might have 2 years or 3 years of predictable payments, and then the whole thing ballooned up. This is how all real estate was done, really, until the Depression, but it worked pretty well up until then. But now you've got people who just, there's no way to budget, certainly into your retirement, what your living costs will be, and we become enslaved by this idea that, you know, you hope that your property goes up by enough. You know, again, this whole idea of rising prices, because that's your only salvation. That's the only way you can keep your head above water. And, of course, there's no guarantee that's going to happen. And if that happens, everything else is going up in price, too. So you're not really winning anywhere. So it's a terrible thing that people have become settled in their thinking about this, because it wasn't always that way. 40 years ago, it was not like this. And we're seeing just how something this drastic in changing people's thinking has yet to fully play out.
Well, when you talk about wealth, inevitably when you read articles about the wealth being up in the last year, it all has to do with the stock market. They're going to say, and price of homes, right? All going up. Well, not all going up. If you're in areas where, if you're downtown Chicago, they're not going up. If you're in some place that everybody wants to go to, like Southern Florida, where Dan Janitas was talking about, you're going up. If you're downtown Chicago or Inglewood or someplace, they're not. But the whole mindset, I mean, when you and I were utes, I mean, our parents, aunts, and uncles, friends of the family, mostly were blue-collar, minor management people. And you build wealth by making $100 a week, living fairly comfortably on 85, and putting 15 in the bank. That is so far...
off the charts now.
It's unthinkable. I mean, I'm not saying they lived great. I mean, they didn't have the night. I mean, a lot of people would want to live in those houses or two that time. But my point being is, now you're supposed to slug away somehow, put money in a scheme or a company that doubles in 2 years, and that's how you make wealth. You know, and with the Fed helping you out, and but that's not the same as having your mean person being able to make enough money to where he can actually sock a little away every week. I don't see that happen anywhere, do you?
No.
Well, I mean, if you're high end, I mean, I would hope that the guy from whatever firm we got the trillion and a half last year, trillion one bonus, I hope he socked a little away. Be pretty. Could you spend a billion one? Could you spend $1.1 billion in a year, Jen? How many rounds would you have to buy at the Tripoli Tap, for God's sake?
I just have to go into Bitcoin.
Yeah, you get. You can always find a way to piss. Do you see some of the yachts these guys are building? they look like ocean liners, for God's sake.
Like the Love Boat.
Anyway, SP Futures, we're now up across the board. Well, we got a. What do you make of the market volatility, John? Is it freaking people out?
It's what you don't want. I mean, when you've got stuff exploding in the Middle East and you've got incredible disarray among the states and how to sort of get to some kind of normal again, and you add the vaccination craze on top of that, and you get a government in Washington that seems more intent on erasing any kind of good feelings about the previous administration as its top order of business. I mean, all of this is just so off the map for being unproductive. The average person must just—I just shake my head. I was like, "We're missing the big picture here. It's probably by design, but we're doing it at our peril."
Well, as the Mideast, I just—I'm not an expert on the Mideast, but I absolutely never liked this guy that runs Israel.
Me neither.
I think he's their Trump, only in some ways worse, I don't think he wants to stand down because he's out if he does.
Well, he's going to ride it. You know, he hopes to some kind of rehabilitation, and I think he's probably one of the people most likely to benefit from this instability. He doesn't gain any points even with the Israelis when everything is peaceful over there.
Well, he's supposed to be out,
he's a crook. but it's somebody we've had the tense on off on again off again relationship, and he's we deal with him no matter what. We can't just
we do because they're our best ally, probably. I mean, anyway, SP Futures up 4, and as if he's up 48, we're trying to make a run to the upside here. We'll see if that sticks. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What do we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.